folks, and thank you for joining us on the second Money, Money, Money podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay, and we are here to talk about personal finance. This week, I have a very special guest with me on the show, Kaustubh Belapurkar of Morningstar. The topic of discussion, all of these new fund offerings that are suddenly flooding the market. Yes, you heard me right. You would have seen a lot of these NFO ads perhaps over the last several months. So the question is, are these new mutual fund offerings really worth your while? A lot of them are thematic funds. Some of them focus on the consumption theme. Some of them are focusing on things like banking and financial services. Should you look at these new funds or should you just stick to the tried and tested old ones? That's what we discuss with Kaustubh Belapurkar.
Thanks, Kaustubh, so much for joining us.
Thanks,
on the show.
Abhi.
Good to have you back on Money, Money, Money. So it's getting a little confusing because after a big lull, suddenly there are ads in the papers and we've been, you know, reading and hearing about this all along. What's causing this flurry of NFOs over the last few months?
Sure. So a couple of things have happened, Surabhi. One is clearly, like we said, the recategorization that's, you know, maybe it carried out and kind of got completed by the middle of this year. A lot of AMCs are now looking at gaps in their product suite mm-hmm. and identifying some key products where they probably don't have a product and looking to launch. I would say that's slightly limited on the equity side, more happening on the fixed income side. But you're seeing some asset managers come out with some new sort of standard products on that side. The other thing, and more importantly, is also on the thematic side, you're seeing certain themes or sectors where managers have, you know, either they've been, you know, underplayed over the last few years and now you're seeing an emergence of that and you're seeing managers kind of come out with themes around that. So clearly, I think these are the two large trends on the equity side where, you know, that's why you've seen a lot of new fund offerings coming in. And I can understand it is a little confusing sometimes for investors.
But no reason to worry, right? Because in the past, what we've seen is when there's a bevy of NFOs, you know, that's the first warning sign that goes up out there in terms of what the market might do next.
So I wouldn't say any reason to worry. But obviously, you would want to look at each offering, you know, individually to understand the merits of, you know, what that brings to the table. And you already have an existing alternative which could really suit you, rather than looking for a new offering where there's no track record per se for that fund. So I think that's something investors need to evaluate.
So Kaustubh, let's get started without taking any more time. Now, Morningstar has come out with a very exhaustive list of all these new fund offerings and what kind of funds they really are. I want to start with the thematic category first, because this is interesting. After a long time, we're seeing interest back in pharma, as you're saying.
Right.
There is a new consumption fund that's come out, the BNP Paribas India Consumption Fund. Now, let's go step by step. Consumption, for instance, is obviously the market's darling theme.
Right.
Many of these stocks are already at their 52-week highs. How would you look at a consumption fund at this point when stock prices are really already elevated?
Sure. So the first caveat I would like to make is that if I'm advising an investor to look at funds such as these, first thing I would advise is that your core portfolio still remains as diversified equity funds and your equity holding. These would only be add-ons to your portfolio as a satellite portion. And ideally, they shouldn't form more than 10, maximum 15% of your portfolio. That's, you know, that's the way I would play some of these themes. Now, when you talk about individual themes, now you could either have very sector-specific funds like the ones you spoke about, which is, for instance, the pharma theme, right? Where pharma's, we all know it's gone through its own set of troubles and you know, it's been kind of a beaten down sector for quite a few years now. But we're seeing that, you know, that early green shoots of recovery on companies, you know, again, it's a very company specific thing, but that's happening. Even managers through their existing funds have been increasing pharma exposure, albeit in a small proportion, but they are looking to increase pharma exposure in their funds. So, you know, the two funds that have recently come out is basically looking at kind of taking that bet that, you know, pharma is going to go through that turnaround. And, you know, why don't we take some exposure to the sector through a very, very specific healthcare fund? It's not only pharma, it's, you know, the whole diagnostics and you know, that the hospital play also, which is, you know, the more domestically driven part of
healthcare, basically.
The healthcare bit, which is, you know, which is an interesting pie because that's also growing. So, you know, we talk about pharma, but we talk about the domestic healthcare hospital segment. That's also an exciting segment to look at. So I would say that, you know, it could be an interesting play, but what becomes important is the timing, right? Because, you know, we've seen sectors do go through their... So this might be a right time to get in, but you also need to think about the time that you want to get out of it.
Because when these sectors go off the radar, they can go off the radar for sort of years together. I mean, I think memories of people who invested in a lot of the infrastructure funds back in the previous boom, 2008, 2009, I think... those would still be around. But again, if I go down to the specifics, mm-hmm. we are talking about the ICICI Prudential Pharma Fund, and we're talking about the Mirae Asset Healthcare Fund.
That's right.
In terms of the people who are managing these funds, how do you rate them? Just overall track record, because we don't have past performance to go by over here.
So let me start with ICICI. So clearly, you know, if you look at the team at ICICI, I mean, they've always been, you know, especially Naren, you know, the CIO, he's always had that contrarian bent of mind.
He's always liked things that are out of vogue.
Absolutely. And he's been, and you know, when I spoke about managers increasing pharma exposure, Naren and his team have been doing that, not recently, but they've been doing that for a while now. So clearly, you know, that team obviously stacks up really well in terms of, you know, identifying those ideas and doing that. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, if you want to, you know, kind of look at, you know, this fund would probably be a good idea in terms of just taking exposure to healthcare if you do think you want to take exposure. Yeah. The second fund, right, from Mirae. Again, Nilesh and his team, excellent stock pickers. So, I mean, just getting that fundamental valuation and the thought process behind a company and its, you know, its intrinsic valuation, I think they've done a really good job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but their pharma analyst is the one who's kind of also running the fund. Yeah, so it kind of helps them, you know, get the right person to pick the stocks.
Brijesh Kasera, yes, I think. So he's the person running the Mirae Pharma Fund. Yeah. Okay.
So kind of, I would say both extremely good offerings from two good asset managers. Mm-hmm. But again, like I said, if you want to take exposure, be aware that you need to get your timing of entry and exit right. Okay. Because it's not an evergreen theme that's going to remain. Mm-hmm. So think about that and don't over-allocate.
So what's a personal rule of thumb that you follow? If you're getting into a concentrated thematic fund, then should it be capped at 10% of your holdings, portfolio?
I would say overall 15%. Sectoral fund exposure, thematic exposure shouldn't be more than 10, max 15.
Okay.
And at a fund level, probably each theme would be like 5%. If I'm playing a couple of themes, maybe 5% each theme.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to move to the next theme, and that is the BNP Paribas India Consumption Fund. Now, consumption is a boom word. It's a buzzword. It's an evergreen theme in this country. How do you rate the team at BNP Paribas and whether a consumption fund specifically makes sense to you? I'm sure almost every stock in this fund would already be at multi-year highs.
Right. So let me talk about the theme first, right? So if you look at the theme, and like you rightly said, it's a theme that's been playing and it's been a darling of the street. Mm-hmm. But even if you speak to managers today, they are still loading up on the consumption theme.
Okay.
You know, it's not just your urban consumption, or your rural consumption is just, you know, picking up and up more. Mm. And that's where you can see even in the stock picks of diversified equity funds, you have a lot of these consumption stocks coming in. You're getting more and more stock listings around that. You know, some of the luxury names, you know, be it the hotels where you're seeing a lot of interest coming in. Yeah. So clearly this, I think, is a slightly more evergreen theme from an India perspective, where, you know, you can look to play it out for a slightly longer time period. Okay. It's not something that's going to go away. Obviously, valuations have run up, but, you know, we would expect that this should continue. And again, the team, you know, while we don't really track them very actively, but, you know, Anand Chow, the CIO, again, a very, very astute manager. So you would expect them to do a really good job when it comes to running this fund.
Okay. Let's come to the Sundaram Services Fund. Again, it's a new offering.
Right.
What's the thought process, rationale? When you say services, that's a really loose term, right?
Yes.
So I'm wondering what all this fund will look at.
Yeah. So again, like you said, the services theme is pretty broad-based. I think the first starting point is when you look at, you know, services as a sector, you know, it is the most dominant sector in terms of the GDP of the country.
Sure.
But when you look at the representation within the stocks, it's not necessarily all your pure service sort of companies are the ones which are the largest. I mean, you have a lot of manufacturing names and things of that which kind of also do. So, I mean, they're kind of underrepresented in that sense in terms of services, you know, the ones they would look at. I mean, this is services catering to retail individuals and things of that, you know. You know, be it communication services, tourism, hospitality, and, you know, various segments of that. So I think, again, there is a fair bit of play that you can get here where, you know, again, could be an upcoming sort of, you know, you could see new listings or smaller companies actually growing a share of the pie, you know, getting into that. I mean, retail is one segment which is growing, right? I mean, but it's not completely kind of institutionalized in that sense. It's still smaller players that are there. But, you know, that's where you could actually see a lot of these plays fructify.
So retail is finding a lot of sort of exposure
within
this front, this fund. Okay, that brings me to the IDBI Banking and Financial Services Fund. Now, this one has lots of existing competitors already.
Right.
Why should I look at this fund, this NFO then?
Yeah. So I think, like you rightly said, mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's more of a case of the asset manager creating a product which is missing in their basket.
Okay.
There are already enough banking and services funds mm-hmm. and run by, you know, for many years by much larger fund houses.
Sure.
So clearly, you know, and this is again a segment of the industry, again, which is slightly more evergreen, right? We've seen the banking theme play out. It's going to play a part in India's growth. So these would be the most slightly evergreen themes that I would want to think about.
Sure.
You know, consumption services, banking and services. Mm-hmm. But there obviously, I mean, there's a plethora of 20 plus funds that you can choose from.
Yeah.
Then you need to really look at, you know, A, the pedigree of the fund managers that have been running it, and obviously the track record they've managed.
Sure. Also, so let's come to ETFs, because as a category, I think the awareness is growing. People realize that these are cheaper options. And if you're just going to mirror an index, then why not look at ETFs? So this Bharat 22 ETF, this was launched sometime back, the second tranche.
That's right.
Now, what we understand is that there is a Bharat 22 fund of funds that's also come through.
Right.
Explain this concept and product to us, please.
Sure. So if you look at a traditional ETF, it's basically, as the word, the name stands, is an exchange-traded fund. An investor typically buys it on the exchange. Now, what we've seen historically is, you know, the smallest retail investors, if you want to, A, you need to create a demat account to actually purchase these securities, and B, sometimes you don't get enough liquidity or the price you want it at on the exchange. While an ETF obviously allows you to buy it almost at a live price, but it also comes with some of these disadvantages that I spoke about. I think this will change as the ETF market grows and becomes much more liquid. But for the pure retail investor, you know, it's traditionally been used to either signing a form or going online and buying a fund. The fund of fund becomes, you know, a very easy sort of platform to do it. So essentially, the fund of fund is subscribing to ETF, but operationally, it becomes a little easier for the investor to just, you know, do it online or sign a form and subscribe to the ETF.
Okay, so that's the concept.
Yes, that's right.
And this ICICI Prudential Bharat 22 ETF fund of funds, this is going to be open throughout, like it's an open-ended fund. So you can write a check at any point and invest in. Okay, so that takes care of this one. Then we also have seen the UTI Nifty Next 50 fund come through. This is based on, I'm guessing, NSE's Nifty Next 50 index.
That's right.
Which is the index of the next 50 big companies after the Nifty 50 companies. Are there existing other such existing products already in the market?
Yes, to my memory, there's one from ICICI already.
Okay.
And it's got a pretty good track record, obviously, because that segment of the market's done, I think, really well. And that's where I think UTI has looked to fill that gap. I mean, they have a Nifty and a Sensex ETF, but it would be nice for them to have a Next 50 because that's where, you know, investors' attention is turning towards.
Okay. Just a word generally on ETFs. I mean, these are two new launches that have happened. What are the things to keep in mind? Because the composition of the underlying stocks is going to remain the same.
Yes.
So is cost the biggest factor? When you have similar products in the market, ETF products, how do you pick and choose? Yeah.
So I think cost becomes the most important deriving factor because if all things are alike, you know, if you're mirroring the index, cost is going to derive, you know, how much tracking error potentially you would have.
Yeah.
Now, we've seen most of the index providers or ETF providers have actually dropped costs quite significantly.
Okay.
So they'll be in the range of as low as 10 basis points going up to maybe 25. There are some outliers for slightly differentiated ETFs which are higher than that. For instance, BSP had a Nifty 50, equal Nifty 50 ETF, which is not a pure play on the Nifty. Rather, they do an equi weight of all 50 stocks, which gives you a slightly different flavor, so to speak. But your traditional bread and butter ETFs, which just mirror the index, cost becomes a very, very important factor when you look at it.
Beyond ETFs, we've seen some interesting launches even in the hybrid category. Now, the hybrid category is pretty wide. Kostab has picked out two interesting funds for us. The Kotak Balanced Advantage Fund and the Invesco India Equity and Bond Fund.
That's right.
I'll come to Balanced Advantage in a bit because that's a well-defined category. When you say Invesco India Equity and Bond Fund, what kind of a hybrid fund are we talking about?
Sure. As per SEBI's definition, this is what they call the aggressive hybrid fund.
Okay.
Essentially, what this fund would do is buy in, equities in the range of 65 to 80%.
Okay. So primarily equity.
Primarily equity. This is what the erstwhile balanced category was called.
Okay.
So there are obviously a lot more other funds that are already available with long established track records. Invesco is kind of filling a gap in their product suite.
Okay, well, so that's the Invesco India Equity and Bond Fund. Coming to the Kotak Balanced Advantage. Right. Now, the Balanced Advantage category, I think this gives the AMC or the manager absolute flexibility to move either ways. The allocation can shift between debt and equity depending on market conditions, right? Again, lots of existing products already out there. I know ICICI Pru has been very actively advocating for their Balanced Advantage product.
Correct.
Nimesh and his team, I think they really like this product. So how would you rate the Kotak Balanced Advantage? Almost every AMC has a Balanced Advantage fund.
Yes, quite a few of them do. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the category, it's essentially, you know, the manager taking a call, like you said, and looking at the equity valuations or whatever parameters they want to look at and deciding what the equity and debt allocation should be. The flexibility is immense. You can, as the mandate says, you can go from 0 to 100 in either of these asset classes. Now, I don't expect such dramatic swings to happen. Mm-hmm. But essentially, the idea is that when investors are coming in, if they don't know what time is right to cut equity exposure, a fund like this could potentially do that for you.
Sure.
Where either a manager takes a call, bases his conviction on, okay, equities are undervalued or overvalued, or some of them, like the ones you mentioned, ICICI, kind of run some models where, you know, we look at PE and price to book and take a call as to, you know, historically, is it into the overvalued zone or undervalued or fairly valued, and they would decide their exposure.
Sure.
So this allows investors, without having to do anything, actually dynamically get an equity exposure, which a manager or professional manager decides. So it might be good for certain investors who don't want to take a call, you know, on
asset allocation.
On asset allocation, or more about, you know, they want to take a dynamic asset allocation call.
Sure. We've just discussed a lot of those NFOs, new fund offerings that are out on the street. And now it's time for another interesting conversation. Recently, Morningstar came out with its global analysis of mutual funds, the global AMC community. And Kausa, this was really interesting because in the report, when it comes to fees and expenses, on that scorecard, India is actually below average. I mean, there are the top category countries like Australia, Netherlands, New Zealand, Sweden. There's above average, South Africa, even Thailand, the UK. The average countries include Denmark, Japan, Korea, Norway. We are below average, but we're not alone. There's France, there's Germany, there's China, and if you want company, even Singapore, by the way. And then the bottom category includes countries like Belgium, Canada, and Taiwan. Is that bad when it comes to fees and expenses?
Okay, so let me clarify what this report intends to do. Mm-hmm. So this report essentially compares 25 geographies across the world on different parameters. So fees and expenses are obviously one part of it, but there, we look at regulation, we look at sales practices and other things. So if you look at India's overall sort of investors, and this is an investor experience study.
Okay.
So India actually ranks average on an overall basis.
Okay.
And we're actually top of the pack in terms of, say, disclosures and you know, sort of some of those parameters. Mm-hmm. Disclosures being, you know, being portfolios being disclosed and things like that. So disclosures, transparency to investors. I think we're amongst the best, just along with the United States, no one else.
Okay.
On the fees and expenses pillar, there are a couple of observations that we've, so obviously we try to compare all 25 geographies, but there are a couple of caveats here, right? So one is, so if you read our report in detail, we say that India is, you know, for equity funds and balanced funds, amongst the most expensive expense ratios in the world.
Okay.
We're one of the few geographies that have expense ratios in excess of 2%.
All right.
But at the same time, when you look at money market and fixed income, we're fairly competitive.
Okay.
So that's why India doesn't get the bottom grade on fees and expenses. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons. The other reason is that we are all bundled expense ratio. Mm-hmm. And that's where some of the debates started to run. So what we mean by bundled expenses is that there's a management fee component, you know, which the asset manager charges along with the other costs that he incurs. Mm-hmm. And there's a distribution component that's embedded into the expense.
Yeah.
So over and above that,
which now we're supposed to be told. I mean,
that should also be a clear disclosure. Correct.
As to how much of that expense ratio is actually going to distribution and commissions, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. So it's more about each individual getting to know what his distributor makes through his portfolio. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the point that I was making is that the entire fees is one flat fee. So as an investor, I can just go to a distributor and I get charged the expense ratio of the fund. I do not pay anything above that, right? In some of the other markets, and that's what's happening globally now, is they're trying to break the two up.
Okay.
And that's happened in most of the larger markets, where you say that, okay, we unbundling the expenses, which to our mind is a better experience for investors, and I'll tell you why. So basically, you break out the management fees, you break out the distribution commission per se. So when you get into a fund, you're paying the management fee,
absolutely,
which is a lot lower than the overall expense.
Okay.
And then you pay an advisory fee, mm-hmm, or a platform fee as per the services that you get.
Mm.
If you're getting a pure execution, you'll end up probably paying only a platform fee.
Mm-hmm.
If you want advice or you want some level of financial planning, so the value that you derive is the fee that you pay.
Mm.
Right now, mm-hmm, from our context, and we can understand, you know, India is obviously still a growing market. Investors are still opening up to the idea of of mutual fund investing.
And these
right?
products are still being pushed through these distribution
that's right,
channels.
That's right.
So therefore,
and that's where we have acknowledged that, yes, it's understandable that India is still higher than the others. So obviously we are higher than the others,
okay,
but it's an understandable zone.
Okay.
But at the same time, the regulator is obviously making, you know, some of the questions that he's asking, that once we're growing, like I said, there are two elements, right? The distribution fee, now distribution is still hard to reach.
Mm.
You're still getting down to the lower levels or the smaller cities.
Yeah.
So there's a cost involved to that.
Mm.
But I think where the regulators also come from, as the assets grow, the management fees, the asset managers that they charge, you know, their economies of scale really kicks in.
Sure.
You know, that's probably where I think the regulator is trying to look at.
So a couple of questions. First of all, as you said, that India is probably one of the few geographies where the expense ratio is in excess of 2%.
That's right.
We right now, I think, roughly would be in the range of 2-2.5.
Depends on the fund size. Some funds would be about 2.2%.
Yeah.
And that'll come down marginally because the regulator has reduced expenses on one element by about 15 basis points.
Right.
But yeah, we still, on an average, you know, when we talk about investor experience, what an average investor pays is still in excess of 2%.
So we are in the below average category at about 2 to 2.25%.
Yes.
The better ranking countries, the above average countries, or even the average countries, what is the total fee over there?
Yeah. So if you look at just the expense ratio for the fund, you know, it could be as low as 60 to 70 basis points in a country like the US, which is obviously the top ranked country.
Okay.
But some of the average countries would probably be in the range of 1 to 1.5%.
Yeah.
Now, the other point that's very important to articulate is the direct plan, right?
Mm.
Now, we have all the ammunition to become a cheaper country.
Mm.
See, the study was meant to look at, on an average, what investors are paying to buy a fund, right? And India, because traditionally most of the investors have been in the regular plan, and if you look at the numbers, about 86% of equity investors are in the regular plan.
Mm.
And again, that is understandable. Given that, you know,
we need hand-holding, and very few people would understand enough to just go and buy a fund online.
Correct.
So,
but the direct plan also needs to start picking up now.
Mm.
It's been almost actually more than 5 years since the direct plan was launched.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 14%, because there are enough savvy investors in the country who are your sort of do-it-yourself investors.
Yeah.
The question that, you know, we need to ask ourselves as an industry is, are we doing enough to promote direct
plans,
you know, as an avenue? At least investors need to be aware of that.
Okay, well, I guess there's still some room, I think, for slightly better priced products, as you just told us, because some of the global examples are at better levels, lower expense ratios in where we operate. Well, that's interesting and enlightening information. Thank you, Kausav, very much
for
taking out the time and helping us decode a lot of this stuff.
Well, all right, folks, that's it on this week's Money, Money, Money podcast. Remember, you can catch the show on YouTube or catch us live when we go on air Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. See you again next time.